Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quinsey connecting the light. We apologise about the lateness in starting. We had some technical problems with the telephone, but I'm pleased to say my guest today is Elaine Thompson. She is an international clairvoyant. She has also been contacted by an ET from Sirius, has met a Starfleet captain from the Galactic Federation, and also members of the Andromedan Council and so forth. She paints star guides, angels and spirit guides, and to round that off, she uses frequency and sound for healing, and in the course of the program, we will mention an excellent book that I have actually read. Are you there, Elaine?
Hi there, Mike. Yes, I am.
Thank goodness you haven't
disappeared.
Can you
hear me?
Yes. I'm very pleased you're on anyway. It's a shame that we've lost a few minutes of the program, but I think a good place to start is, having mentioned that you use frequency and sound for healing, and since you haven't long come back from a seminar in Hawaii, is to tell us a little bit about that and what the type of healing is.
Well, it's an amazing method of healing, and it uses high-tech computers, and it's all about voice analysis. And my seminar in Hawaii was a great success. We had a full house, and everybody brought their various skills to the seminar. And I was also joining that up with the swimming with dolphins as well, because dolphins, as you know, are great healers.
Yeah.
This kind of sound therapy heals or balances people with illnesses right across the board. And my specialty it has to do with people with serious illnesses that have gone everywhere that they can with allopathic doctors and don't have any luck, and they have got nowhere else to go. And with this form of healing, you can read in a person's voice, by analyzing the voice, everything that is out of balance within the person, be it biochemical, emotional, physical, muscles, anything you can care to think of, it will show in the voice, and we can correct it.
Yes. So what did you actually do at the seminar? Did you take workshops or simply talk about the healing?
It was a six-day seminar, and I gave three or four talks with PowerPoint presentations on the principles of sound, because so many people think of sound as just noise, like maybe a fridge humming or a road drill making a noise outside, or even just singing or speech. They don't really think about the fact that sound is a universal language, and
yeah,
everything around us makes some sort of sound, has a frequency. And they don't think of their bodies as giving off a signature melody. And when that melody goes out of tune, as it were, then that's when they manifest physical problems. So I was teaching them about the principles of sound and how sound affects every single thing in your daily life. And also,
yeah,
I was doing practical demonstrations, voice analysis on all the people who were there, and showing them how their voices went up and down and where the problems were and how it related to any physical or emotional problems that they may be carrying with them.
Yes. Once having identified their problems, do you then advise them what sort of treatment they would need? In other words, would it be then orthodox healing, or do you actually then carry on with sound healing as well?
Yes, well, the way to balance people with sound is to give them back the sounds they're missing. And this kind of sound that I use is generally called infrasound. It's very, very low frequencies within the brainwave range. And we found through years and years of doing this therapy that the frequencies that are lowest in the brain between, say, delta waves alpha waves, theta waves, beta waves, are the ones that act the quickest. They're the quickest at bringing about rapid change.
Yeah.
For example, I had a client with dementia, and within half an hour of giving him treatment, he spoke his first sentence in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it was that the response was very, very rapid with him. And whereas it took four people to carry him into my workroom, he walked out with just the aid of one person, and within 2 days he was walking around and whistling and singing, and really a dramatic change.
That sounds wonderful.
Because I was able to, yes, I was able to ascertain the chemistry in his brain that was missing, and give him back the sounds that he needed to link up the parts of him that were failing to connect in his brain.
Yes. Right, now, at some stage in your various contacts with ETs, I recall that you met one who predicted where you would eventually take a place, which I imagine from what you said is where you now have your healing centre. So do you only have the one place, or do you travel and do healing for people? How does that work out?
Well, the place I had at the time was a lovely centre in Glastonbury where I held seminars and I would take people for healing. I belong to the National Federation of Spiritual Healers. And I've gone on from there and taken my sound work out all over the world. I've been to Germany, all across Europe, and to America, working with people in clinics and private venues, teaching people and showing people how to heal themselves, both emotionally and physically.
So how would that work out, say, for someone that was in America that was interested in what you have to offer?
Well, now with the advent of all this wonderful technology we have, it's possible for me to help people over the internet.
Yeah.
And on my site, which I'll talk about later on, there's a facility for contacting me by email, and people can send me a recording of their voice, and I can run it through my computer programs and then spend time analyzing it, and along with a medical description of their problem, I can come to find the right frequencies to give to them. And then I burn it to a CD, or I put their frequencies onto a special little device we have called a tone box, and then send it to them. And I keep in close contact with them to support them whilst they're going through their changes and their healing.
Right. So distance is no problem as far as you're concerned, because you can deal with any inquiries from wherever they come.
Absolutely. That's why I've been able to travel so extensively, because wherever I am in the world, you can reach me by email. And
yeah,
I'm always very open to help people anywhere in the world that maybe don't have this kind of therapy near to them.
Yes. Are you in any way unique in offering that particular service?
Oh, no. There are many, many therapists in America and Spain and all over the world that give this kind of treatment. But we found that people out there who use it tend to blend it with other things that they do. For example, chiropractors who have learned about sound use it in conjunction with the work they do, the body work that they do, or nutritionists, or emotional therapists, psychologists. They use it as an additional tool, whereas I specialize completely in just the sound work.
Right. Were you guided to take up that particular type of healing through your ET contacts, or was that your own choice?
Well, no, I believe it was by divine guidance that I came to sound therapy, and it all happened when I was in Glastonbury. I had a dream one night, and believe you me, I never remember my dreams because I always sleep very deeply. And I woke up one morning with this absolute surety that the key to the future of medicine and healing of all people lay in sound and vibration. But I didn't know what to do with it at the time. And so, having a very busy life, I put it to one side because I just didn't know where to go with it. I thought perhaps I could play the piano or do something like that, but it didn't seem enough. And then another divine intervention came when Joan Ocean came to stay with me, and she invited me to go stay with her in Hawaii. She swims with the dolphins. And very casually, she introduced me to someone, by the means of a videotape, who was beginning to pioneer this therapy in America. And when I saw it, I couldn't believe my eyes, really. I didn't know whether it was something crazy or whether it was the real thing. So I went to America and found out. And yes, indeed, it was everything that she claimed it was. And so I went and did the training, and then I went on and did teacher training, and it progressed from there. And I just have been inundated with people ever since I started. Thousands and thousands of people I've seen, which has given me my vast experience with every type of disease you could possibly think of.
Yeah. Right. Now, what I will ask you, having mentioned that you have this contact with ETs, when did it first start with you, and how did it develop to lead you into the life that you're now in?
Well, it was very interesting. I was, a period when I was in Glastonbury, and I've since found out that I had contact with ETs from a very early age, from the age of 3. But my first conscious contact with them was in the late 80s. And I was going about my normal business every day, ironing and washing like we all do, doing things, and decided by pure chance that I thought, tonight I'll sit down and maybe do some trance channeling. That was something I'd always wanted to do, but never really plucked up the courage to do it. It was a joke, really. And I went on throughout the day carrying on, and the allotted time that I'd set for it passed. And then all of a sudden, I felt this compelling urge to just sit down. I had to sit. My guides sometimes do that to me. They make me sit down when they want my attention. So I ran into the bedroom and plonked myself on the bed and snuggled up with the duvet and got a tape recorder out. And lo and behold, this voice came into my head, very loud and clear, telling me that he was a Starfleet captain from the Galactic Federation and that he had come to tell me about my future and what I was going to do with regards to healing and so on. And I was totally incredulous. I couldn't believe it. Now, he must have sensed that I was a little bit cautious. One of my rules of thumb with receiving things from higher guidance and things is I never question at the time. I listen patiently, take it all in, and then I make up my mind afterwards, because I find if you judge things as they're coming in, then the contact stops. So he must have known that I was feeling a bit odd about all this and didn't know whether to believe him or not. And he did an amazing thing. He came into my energy space and he superimposed his energy over mine. And my whole body just felt like I was in the center of a whirlwind. My energy inside just began to spin and spin and spin so fast that I eventually felt sick. And as soon as I felt that, he removed himself and he said, "I'm very sorry I had to do that." He said, "But it's absolutely imperative that you know that we are real and that we are here to help mankind. And this is the beginning of a journey for you that will take you to the hearts of many people. and help us in our mission to help you. So, yes, that was how it happened. And even the next day, I thought, well, was that, what was that? Was that my guides, you know, did that really happen? And I phoned, this is again synchronicity. I had a phone call from a friend of mine who was a very well-known medium from London. And I said to her, you'll never guess what happened to me. I said, I had this guy, this ET from the Galactic Federation. I said, I've never heard of it. And she said, oh, my dear. She said, everyone knows about the Galactic Federation. She said, you know, it's a well-known thing. So that was it. You know, I said, oh, thank goodness for that. And there we are. You know, that was when it started. And it went on through all the meetings I had. I met this wonderful, wonderful being from Sirius. And Sirians come in many shapes and sizes. And some of them are very human-looking. And some of them are maybe 14 or 15 feet tall. They have a tremendous presence with an energy that sends out the most amazing love. And this was who contacted me, this beautiful being from Sirius. And he used to give me anecdotes and stories. I suppose it's because when it comes to the way I receive things, that's how I like to receive them. So I don't always know what the whole story means before it's played out. And in that way, I find that my mind doesn't interfere. And if I don't understand it immediately, then I know that it's coming from a true source.
Yeah.
And he gave me these wonderful stories that are anecdotes for people, helpful ways to learn to live. For example, one of the great things he said to me was, enough is always enough. Enough is all you need. And it was a little lesson in the differences we have in this world between the people who have not enough and the people who have far too much. And I thought, even in that simple sentence, enough is all you need, was a great message to us all, really, about sharing and so on.
Yeah. Now, the Syrians, in a conversation with I think it was your friend Anne, asked the question, told you that they can change their energy forms at will. Did you have any first experience of that happening?
No, I never saw them physically change at will, but he did demonstrate to me that they were higher dimensional beings. I think he mentioned the seventh dimension, which, as far as I'm concerned, is basically just energy form. And he said he took on that form in order that I could see him clearly. But he also said that if they wanted to become a tree or make themselves in the image of a human being to come down to Earth to interact with us, or a rock, that they could. And I found in my experience with many of the ETs that they have this amazing knowledge of how to manipulate their molecular structure.
Yes.
They can change, disappear, you know, fade in and out. I suppose you, when you look at a lot of the UFOs that seem to pop in and out of our dimension, they do have this knowledge of how to zip through the dimensions and manipulate their structure.
Right. So what you're literally saying is, I believe, that they have this tremendous power of thought to make these things happen.
Yes, their thoughts are refined to such a degree that they're very pure and very focused. And they have the ability to reform themselves. It was explained to me, actually, in one of the sessions I did, that, and this was to do with our DNA, because they've taught me a lot about how our brain functions and DNA and that sort of thing. And they said, what they said to me was, you know that human DNA is very, very similar to chimpanzee DNA and also very similar to fruit fly DNA.
Yes.
There's only one or two differences there. And also they pointed out the fact that there are thousands of miles of DNA in our body that we don't know what it does, and no one's figured it out yet.
Mm.
And basically what they were implying is that we all have the DNA patterns within our brains, within the cells, to become anything we want. If we could turn on different sections of our DNA and turn off the human part, we could reform into something else. If we were working at an energetic level, obviously. Imagine if I could just dissolve my body into a ball of energy.
Yes.
And within that, my consciousness could say, okay, I'm going to turn off set A and turn on set B, and I'm going to become a tree or a giraffe or anything else you could possibly think of. I think that that's how they do it. They have
very
complete command of all their chemical DNA.
Yes.
And because they work so much on an energetic level, it's far easier to manipulate. And one of the things that they kind of implied to me is that it can be manipulated and changed with sound. It's like first you sing one song, which could be the human song, and then you sing another song, which could be the Andromedan song. So your form would change to that of an Andromedan. Does that make sense to you?
Amazing. I'd like to hear a little bit about the sighting that you had in 1971 when you saw this spacecraft. What can you tell us about that one?
Yes. That was, I don't know, 5 or 6 years after I'd first discovered, really come into my own with my clairvoyant powers and so on and so forth. And I got married and was doing the whole family thing, and I was out driving one day at work, actually. And it was a sunny afternoon, 3 o'clock or so in the afternoon, and suddenly I saw this craft in the sky, and it was very, very low, easily visible. So I pulled over to the side of the road, got out of my van that I was in at the time, and stood up on the runner board and looked out over the roof, and there it was. And it was glittering in the sun. It had some kind of windows or portholes around the side. There was no sound coming from it. It was lower than a normal helicopter flight. So it was pretty low over the sky. It was over, actually, Downend in Bristol. And it was tacking from side to side very slowly so that I could see the form, the shape of the craft, and it had almost like fins on the side, but very sleek, very shiny. And I watched it for some 10 minutes or so, just cruising, looked like it was looking for something on the ground. And then, just as quickly as I'd seen it, it just shot into the distance and disappeared in a second. And it was a clear blue sky. I saw it, though. It was so fast. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. Did you ever get any later contacts where some of the ETs told you that they actually were in that craft for a reason, for your experience?
Well,
did any of them come back on that?
Yeah, they didn't actually tell me they were in that craft, but I did find out, and I have seen other craft and ETs from them appearing to me, you know, in front of me. But no one has ever owned up to having come from that particular class.
No.
I think, but I always think that you only ever see these things if you're meant to. You know, sometimes two people can be standing together and, you know, one sees it and the other says, well, I don't know, I can't see it. But it was larger than life. I even phoned the newspaper and I phoned the local airport and I, you know, I asked them, has anybody else seen this and, you know, anybody else reported on it? And the only joy I could get from any of them was that they said that there had been a lot of UFO sightings over France the week before.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe they were visiting from there. I know they do go all over the world, but the Starfleet captain told me after he left that they were off to Australia. And I know that there have been a lot of sightings over there over the years.
Right. Now, the meetings you had with your being from Sirius, evidently, resulted in your writing what formed part two of your book, Voices from Our Galaxy. Can you tell us a little bit about the background to that? I mean, did you know that it was being given to you to write a book?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, they were really, I would say, gently insistent that they wanted so much to give me their messages for me to put out. And the primary aim of this book was to introduce people to the hundreds and thousands of different types of ETs that there are out there, and the fact that they don't all look like us. And some of them that people might class as looking like animals, they wanted to really show me and let me feel the energy of these beings and the love of these beings and the intelligence so that I could present it in a book and people would understand that they were really just like us. It's just that they, instead of having black or yellow skin, they may have had scaly skin or blue skin, or their heads might be a different shape. And over a course of, you know, 4 months, I sat with a friend of mine, and every week we had contact with them, and they introduced me to some amazing, amazing ETs from all over the place.
Yes. I've looked at your paintings. I believe they were done by you, were they not, of the various ETs you've met?
Yes, absolutely. I love painting them.
Right. Yes. They're very good. What I noticed was that the ones, the most human-looking ET was the one who first contacted you when you were a very young child, and that is your Andromedan female.
Oh, yes. Yes. She and her family, I've since met her children. She has two children. And her partner, I won't call him husband because they don't have husbands as such in the same way that we do. But she is an amazing, amazing being. She's so full of love and so graceful. And, yes, they're very beautiful people. Very beautiful people. Very graceful and tall with slightly silvery blue skin.
Yeah. Our civilization seems to have a very subconscious or deep memory of reptilians, and it's not very favourable. But you met an explorer who was a reptilian. Tell us how you sort of related to that particular ET.
Right. Well, that's an interesting thing, because you call him a reptilian, and that was exactly what I said when I met him. I said, is this being a reptilian? And they said, no, absolutely not. He is a reptoid. Now, there is a difference, I understand, because I know there's been some negative press about reptilians.
Right.
And this this being was wonderful. Like, he had a huge sense of humor and was very interesting to talk to. He took me physically, telepathically, to his home planet, and introduced me to his way of life and the family units there and what happened with the children and so on, and told me that they were a race of explorers who loved to go out and help in the various galaxies and explore. And an interesting thing that he showed me was there, he took me to this, how can I say it was, a huge amphitheater, enclosed amphitheater with a big screen on one wall that was curtained, and the curtains went back, and he showed me that this was the place of their ancestors. Now, I know on Earth we have our spiritual realms where people go when they pass over, and that we can contact grandfathers and great-grandfathers and so on. But in his world, there was one elder, what they called an elder, for each family line. And he told me that the females on their planet had maybe 12 to 14 children at a time.
Right.
And the majority of them were male, not many females to males. And that when it came time for them to die, they had the opportunity to join together with the one elder that was head of the line of their particular family, so that the soul of this one elder became a composite of all the males in that line. And, you know, there may have been, I don't know, 100 of them, but they were one for each family. So they had the accumulated wisdom of all their descendants within them. And I thought, oh, that's pretty neat. That's quite an interesting, interesting fact to find out.
Yeah. Now, it's evident from what you were told, Elaine, that the Andromedans, certainly as one civilization, are going to announce themselves and visit the Earth. And understand, they told you that they would allow some of us to visit their large ships.
Yes. Well, they've talked more about that recently because of the impending climate changes here on Earth. They've told me that the majority of the change that is going to happen on Earth is due to the sun, and it's only 5% our contribution with our pollution and so on. That our pollution helps at all, because it doesn't, and we certainly have to clean up our act.
But we are
going through a natural solar cycle. And also they were telling me that we have to remember that our galaxy is moving through the universe all the time. And we're passing through different quadrants in space, and therefore we come under the effect of whichever quadrant we're passing through.
Yes.
And, you know, I keep very much up with the science aspect of all of this. And I've seen out there that not only are our polar caps melting, but the polar caps on Mars are melting too. And there have been changes in the atmosphere in Venus. And Jupiter has had some changes too in its magnetic field.
Yes.
So, you know, it's not just our planet that's going through climate change. All the planets in our solar system are.
Yes. Yes, I understand that already. Now, Elaine, because we started a bit later, time is absolutely whizzing by. I think I could have had you on here for 2 hours with much of interest to ask you, but we've got the best part of 10 minutes left before I have to turn the program over to the studio. In other words, 5 minutes to the hour. I think you ought to tell us about your present book and something, if you can, about your new one that you're writing, perhaps what it's about and when it may be available, and perhaps you'd like to give our listeners your website address and details of anything else that you would like to pass over to them.
Oh, yes, thank you. Well, okay, just a quick brief synopsis about my book, Voices from Our Galaxy. As I said before, this is all about introducing people to the different kinds of sentient beings that there are out there, and the ones that don't look at all human, showing how they have sometimes amazing qualities in them that qualities that we would aspire to, and that they just function in a different way. And one of the most interesting things, I think, has come from the Andromedans, because they're very keen to talk to me about how we humans work, how our brain works, and how we're going to be working in the future. So in the first book, she explained a lot to me about the left and right side of the brain and energy points and so on, and how we're moving from a logical left brain society into a more right brain and spatial thinking society. And in fact, in the new book, which I've just finished, it's not absolutely at the publishing level, but they have said to me that it's so urgent that I get their messages out that I'm willing to let it out as it is, as a kind of a PDF download, an e-download, because the information is so important. And the whole of the Andromedan family have been together with me over the last 6 months, giving me information on what things are going to be like in the future on planet Earth during extreme climate conditions. They've talked to me about energy in the future, anti-gravity energy and hover cars and hover boats and things like that, and things for construction on Earth, like a miracle polymer they told me about, which is made from silicon and an element found in the sea. They go on to talk about the sun and its effects on Earth. But there's a very large section on trying to teach us now how we can step forward into this new world that we're going to be in, because the changes are going to be big on Earth. And they're teaching me, and it's all in the book, about sensory telepathic communication, how we can begin to learn to take our place as galactic citizens. And we have to learn how to use our minds. We have all the power there. Everything that they have, we have. We just haven't learned to turn it all on yet. So telepathic communication and how to do it. And where the energy points are in the body. They've taught me a little bit about body chemistry, and having a clean body and a clear mind takes us one step closer to having really clear communication with them. They've also spoken about activating DNA with frequency, and they are working now around our planet, generating frequencies to help with the tendency towards aggression that we have here on the planet.
Is that something in the way of a sort of helping us to awaken, as you might say?
Well, yes, helping us to think more about loving each other and not so much about fighting for land or money or religion or whatever. It's introducing us into a whole new way of thinking, And, they have intimated that that some of the changes that will happen on Earth will be so great that we won't have time to think about fighting. It'll be everyone helping everyone else, almost like it did when we had a war, on the home front. We have to look after one another.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. And they spoke
to me
about
the... Would you like to give out your website address, by the way, Elaine?
Oh, yes, I will, yes.
Yes.
My website is www. Elaine, that's E-L-A-I-N-E, Elaine-Thompson, T-H-O-M-P-S-O-N.com. And for the sound therapy and my seminars, go to www.joanocean.com. That's J-O-A-N-O-C-E-A-N, Joan Ocean. And there's also, I have a blog spot, which I've got a lot of the information from the Andromedans, and that is http://, and that's News from Andromeda, N-E-W-S, F-R-O-M, Andromeda, that's all one word, .blogspot.com.
Right. That's great. I'm sure you'll get quite a few visits after this particular program. We're virtually at the end, and I snatched the last minute to announce my next guest. So I'll have to thank you very much for coming on to the program. I think without a doubt, if you're willing, we would love to have you back again in the new year. There's a lot of things yet to ask, I think, and discuss. And perhaps by then you will have advanced a bit more with your new book.
Yes, well, the new book is available for PDF download. Thank you.
Right, okay, that's fine. So I'll have to say goodbye to you here, and thank you very much for coming on. I will be in touch with you later. So thank you very much, Elaine, on behalf of our listeners. And
thank
I will announce my guest next week is Stanton Friedman, who hardly needs any introduction. He's the leading scientific ufologist in North America. He's made and figured in many videos, I think his films. He's helped bring out books. He has a new one called Captured, which is about Betty and Barney Hill, the alien abduction, as they call it, in the 60s. So he's clearly going to prove to be a very, very interesting guest, and I'm really looking forward to it myself. So I hope you'll be with me. Thank you for being with me today, and I'll say God bless you all. Thank you.
Yeah, God bless. Thank you.